It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
When people think of great dining in Southern Nevada, they often think of the Las Vegas Strip. But some of the most exciting culinary stories are happening right in the neighborhoods of Las Vegas. My guest today is Chef Alex Resnick. He's a nationally recognized chef, restaurateur, and entrepreneur. He's gone from competing on Top Chef and defeating Bobby Flay to building two distinctive dining destinations, both in Henderson, SMKD BBQ, and Hayworth. Through his growing Ogden Hospitality Group, Chef Alex is creating restaurants that blend food, hospitality, and a strong sense of community. We'll talk about his journey from television chef to hands-on restaurateur, why he chose Henderson as the home for his latest ventures, and how he's helping redefine what great dining beyond the Strip can look like. And you can follow the chef on Instagram at smkdbbq and Hayworth, and also, I believe, smkd.com. Is that correct, Chef?
That's smkdbbq.com. That's it.
All right, we got it. Well, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. So I almost lost all my hair by trying to figure out what SMKD stood for, but I figured it out. Smoked meats, killer drinks. Is that correct?
That's correct. Okay. So we wanted to have a little bit of fun, you know, because we're using we use live fire. We smoke all our meats at the barbecue place. So when I was coming up with the name, I wanted to have something that's a little punchy, yet direct. So, you know, it's like the kids do it. No vowels.
Yeah.
Smoked, no vowels. SMKD, BBQ, you know. So it's smoked meats, it's killer drinks. We're having a lot of fun there. And, you know. Delicious, bro. What else can I say right now?
Oh, wait a minute. I hope you also appeal to older demographics as well, even though there are no vowels involved.
So, yes, absolutely. And that's kind of a, you know, first of all, I am the older demographic.
That is true.
Thank you.
Well, I was complimenting you.
No, so obviously we cater to all demographics. We're located in Henderson in a vibrant community. We have a lot of people there living over the age of 55 and retiring. And so we have a vibrant young community of over 55.
Right.
And they really come and enjoy it. You know, our family values are really shown in that restaurant because we designed it to be a family-centered restaurant.
Now, wait, before you go further with this commercial, I want to talk about your background. No, I know that was a joke. But I want to get into what I'm really trying to say is let me control the conversation, not you.
Done.
You're a strong personality, so I have to get in there as host. I want to talk about your background. Then we're going to lead up to these two new restaurants in Henderson, which is for those listeners and viewers outside of Las Vegas, it's literally right outside of Las Vegas. It's a suburb, very second largest city, as a matter of fact. But where did you start all this stuff? You're a native New Yorker, correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Brooklyn, in New York City. That was where I spent my youth. And then a little bit in that New Jersey kind of area, high school and all that world. But it was a suburb of New York City. So I was always a New Yorker.
I can understand. So Fox's, You Bet, Syrup, and Coney Island. I got it. Okay.
That's it.
So, and bagels, of course.
The bagels are the best.
The bagels are the best.
That's the one thing I truly, truly miss is a great Jersey bagel.
Yeah. Wait a minute. People would say it's a great New York bagel. You say Jersey bagels are better?
I do.
Wow.
I can tell you. Listen, they're both the same in that respect. They're both getting that same minerality, that same water content. But there's a lot of places in New Jersey just that have people have moved out in Staten Island and a lot of places on the outer boroughs there that have just really great bagels. There are great bagel stores in New York City, but I'm telling you, best bagels are in Jersey.
That's good to know. Have you thought about doing your barbecue? I'm just thinking now with SMKD BBQ. What if you had bagels with the brisket? Bagels and brisket. What do you think?
I mean, first of all,
yes,
brisket and anything is perfect.
Yes,
it goes with everything. But I can't get a good bagel in town. I mean, I'm not putting down any other bagel stores. That's not my agenda here.
No,
but I can't find a good bagel in Vegas. And even though I could make a good bagel. the production of it is really kind of nuanced and difficult. Right. And I think I have enough on my plate.
Yeah, you probably do. So how in the world did you go from New York? I know you have a Eastern European background, but how did you go from growing up in New York, moving to New Jersey, and then getting on television and dealing with all of that world?
Well, I lived in LA for about 20 years. So I did the New York thing and Jersey thing up through, high school and college and all those years. And then in my mid-20s, I moved out west. You know, they say, go west. So west I went in my early 20s, and I lived in LA for about 20 years. And I was I got into culinary literally out west in Los Angeles. And next thing you know, there I am doing some really great stuff. I really love food. And the TV found me. You know, I didn't go searching for the TV stuff. It found me and had a lot of fun with that.
And then you moved back to Las Vegas, but you retained your LA accent. I like that.
That's true. The New York accent comes out whenever I'm talking to New Yorkers or talking about New York City or talking about like the Knicks, that dominated this year. Okay. It comes out. And then my LA, past 20 plus years, except for these past five, obviously, the LA influence has just been drastic on me with the produce and, really farm to table. The nuances of the past 20 years is really, really, I've been focused on that for the past 20 years. You know, moving to Vegas is a little different. We don't really have as much farm to table. Not a lot of farms out here in Vegas.
More desert to table, I think.
It's more like desert to table. It's more like, invite the scorpions in.
Yeah, exactly. Fried scorpions.
No, we get some really great produce in here. There's a lot of great produce that comes in here on the daily. A lot of great seafood comes in here on the daily. So we're getting some of the best product in the country.
This is a naive question. I occasionally ask it of chefs, but how is it that we're in the middle of the desert and yet we get all this fresh seafood, fresh vegetables, fresh fruit? I know it's trucked in and flown in, but isn't it amazing when you can bring in that much culinary material to feed all the visitors and locals in this metropolis, which we're now becoming? I still think of it as a town, but it's getting.
Oh, absolutely. But, I've traveled the world, and I'm sure you have traveled the world, like a lot of people. You go to these fish markets and you see all that fish comes in, and before it even hits the docks, before it even gets allocated to the local places, it leaves straight on trucks. And those trucks go straight to Vegas. Those trucks go straight to all the inland countries, areas, whatever, or wherever they're going. And here in Vegas, we get it right away. We get the prime of the prime. Listen, money talks, right? So we get the best. So before that seafood hits any place, even Los Angeles, we sometimes get even better.
When you moved back to Las Vegas, what was your take? Because I've been here long enough to know when we barely had a couple of restaurants that you would include as a fine dining category. Now, obviously, we're one of the top attractions in that world. When you moved back to Las Vegas, were you surprised at what had transpired while you were gone in the culinary
world? No, honestly, I'm always up to date in culinary, especially what's happening in the States and on the West Coast. I love food. First and foremost about the culinary thing, I love food. I love to eat. I love the hospitality. I love everything about the restaurant business. And I'm always up to date. I knew what restaurants are happening here. I know why they're happening here in Vegas, which ones are succeeding, which ones failing, which all throughout the years I've kept up to date. So I wasn't surprised at all. Listen, Vegas is the epicenter of culinary, whether people like to believe it or not. The best of the best in the world end up here in Vegas. You name a great chef, they want to have a restaurant on the strip. It generates revenue. That's the whole point of the business aspect of this, is that it's the restaurant business. And it might not have the best food comparative to San Francisco or Los Angeles or New York or Chicago singularity, but in totality, it has the best.
So you're looking at Las Vegas, and yet you decide to open up two restaurants, like I said, two, and they're both in Henderson. So how did you end up making that decision? Well, I guess the more interesting part for me is you didn't just open one, you opened two, and you decided to create an alternative to the strip. So what was your thinking behind that?
Well, I moved here, and the one thing we did realize is culinary-wise and eating-wise, the Strip has a lot of great restaurants, a lot of great chefs, a lot of great reputation. Off Strip, there's not as much of a selection, especially in the town I live in, Henderson. Henderson has been known, there's an acronym for Henderson, it's Hendertucky. is what people used to call it. I don't call it Hendertucky. I think it's a wonderful metropolis of wonderful people living in a great, great city with tremendous potential. And honestly, we were always in search of where we're going out to dinner. Where do you want to go out to dinner? We always found ourselves ending up, whether it's in Chinatown or on the Strip. There's really nothing in Henderson that we found to our flavor profile. There's wonderful restaurants in Henderson. No, be it. There's a Chili's. There's an Applebee's. There's a
chain restaurants. Right?
There's a lot of chain restaurants. Right. And there's wonderful ones inside the casinos again. But we wanted to do something different. You know, my passion lies in culinary. I love the hospitality. I love feeding people. And when these two restaurants came, they fell on my lap. Literally, they fell on my lap. They were calling me. They said, "Hey, Alex, we have a location for you. Do you want it? Hey, we have a location for you. Do you want it?" For a long time, I passed. I really wasn't interested in getting back into culinary ownership of a restaurant. But then, you know, after speaking to my wife, and she motivated me into saying, "Go back. Let's open some restaurants together. Let's get this done." So they kind of fell on my lap, and I've, you know, traveling the country. I've traveled the country a lot, doing a lot of consulting. I eat a lot of barbecue, and I love the concept of American barbecue because it tells the story of our history. It's one of our foods. In the United States, we don't have an integrity of our food. Like, this is our food, like Italian food or French food or Greek food. What is American food? Most people say it's a burger. I say it's barbecue. The story of barbecue, where you travel the country, there's love in there. You go to Texas, it's a religion. You go to Memphis, you say something bad about Memphis barbecue, ooh, they get offended. Yeah. You go to South Carolina, that's a whole different animal, whole hog, and we're talking vinegars, and a whole different animal. You go to Kansas City, oh my God, they're all about the burnt ends. So as you travel the United States, you'll see a lot of barbecue. And as the globalization of the United States culinary has been happening over the past 20, 30 years, you'll see a lot of influence in barbecue. So you'll see a lot of, you know, Mexican barbecue now, and you'll see a lot of different barbecue in New Orleans. So there's Creole interpretations, and with so many interpretive factors of American barbecues. I really feel like that is our, you know, it tells a big story.
Well, the big question I've always felt, and I've struggled with this my whole life, why do some people say BBQ and others say barbecue? Why can't we decide on what it's going to be?
Because it's never the same. It's never going to be the same, because barbecue to everybody has their own definition. Let's be realistic. At home, as barbecue, when we say, "Hey, we're going to barbecue," what does that mean? Hamburgers, hot dogs, maybe throw a steak on there. But you go down south, or you go to the places with smoke, and they go, no. If you're not smoking, you're not barbecuing. A grill is not a barbecue.
True. But I was thinking more of the pronunciation, because obviously with SMKD BBQ, it's not SMKD barbecue.
Right.
So why is that? In your case, I understand, because it's no vowels, and we got that earlier. I'm paying attention. But but why is it some people just call it BBQ and other people call it barbecue, or does it really matter in the end?
You know, I'm going to tell you, I have no idea.
Oh, good. I like that answer. I like a good, honest answer. All right. That's good.
Yeah.
So
no idea.
How does that work with, and I'm very familiar with smokers, as our audience I'm sure is, SMKD BBQ, how do you set up the smoker, and how long do you smoke, not your cigarettes, but I mean the meat, how long do you smoke before it is ready for?
So we have a beautiful offset smoker up front, and the offset smoker is, it's wonderful, yet very nuanced and difficult. So we use mostly post oak. We'll use a little bit of mesquite charcoal to really get that heat. So it depends on the meat, honestly. So a St. Louis rib takes about 6 hours to make, almost exactly 6 hours. A brisket, depending on the weight, takes anywhere between 10, and the way we do it is 16 hours. So we'll smoke it for at least 8 hours on the offset smoker, and then we'll wrap it in tallow and hold it overnight, low and slow, till it hits that 150. You know, we pull it at 150 and let it go overnight. So the next day is when we serve the brisket. So if we don't have brisket today, you're not getting more till tomorrow.
Got
it. It's going to take at least 18 hours.
That's a long haul. What is it? Just not to get overly technical with you, but I'm curious. What is the process when you're smoking meat over a long period of time, what does it do to the meat? It breaks down the fibers in the meat. Is that what happens?
That's exactly what it does. It breaks down low and slow. So it does a few things. One, that slow cooking process literally does that. It breaks down that collagen, breaks down that muscle fiber so that it's tender. If you think about it, back in the day and when we grew up, the brisket was the cheapest cut of meat. All our grandparents would buy this brisket because it was cheap. And the reason it's cheap is hard to eat. It's hard to chew. And you know, as if you ever cook brisket at home, it's one of the hardest meats to cook because you overcook it, it's dry. You undercook it, it's chewy. So the concept behind always brisket cooking, whether it's whether you're doing a corned beef brisket or a brisket at home or a brisket on the smoker, is low and slow because you need to break down all that fiber. You know, we do that in other techniques. We call it stewing. We stew our meat low mm-hmm. and slow, like you take a roast and you slowly cook it and stew it. So there's a braising. You know, there's other meats that we do that with as well.
Right.
But brisket is that's America's choice.
So how do you merge your East European background with the American barbecue world?
So, you know, like I said, brisket is something we grew up in. Culturally, the brisket was a cheap cut of meat. My grandmother would buy a brisket for all the holidays, and she would cook it low and slow in the oven, and we'd have a brisket. And most of the time, it was dry or chewy and never done right. But hey, listen, kudos to grandma. She had a tiny little kitchen in Brooklyn, New York City, right. You know, with a tiny oven, and she'd cook for 18, 20 people, you know, out of this tiny little apartment in the heat. And She did wonderful. You know, the memories I have over there is just incredible. And I wanted to do the same thing for my children, but I want to cook the brisket just a little bit with more finesse.
And a bigger kitchen.
And a much bigger kitchen. Yeah. And not much bigger. Actually, if you come to the kitchen and smoked, you'd be surprised how small it is. We have that offset smoker loaded and running almost 20 hours a day sometimes.
Well, how did that – now, because of you, you had the issue of – the barbecue, but then you open up a second restaurant called Hayworth, which of course we all know is named after Rita Hayworth. And so that's a salute to Hollywood. I'm making this all up right now. How did you get the name Hayworth?
You know, so when we decided to open up this other restaurant, right, it came across as I sat in the space. I knew the space. I knew the space very well. I knew the location. And I had to come up with why I wanted to open this restaurant. That was, to me, was the most important thing of why.
Yeah, sure.
And I knew I really it was for a community. This restaurant is the middle. When I say it's in the middle of nowhere, it's the middle of nowhere.
But if it's in the middle of nowhere, then how does it draw people? It's got to be in the middle of Henderson for people to know where it is.
So we are. So when I say nowhere, it's where I live. It's where my friends live. It's where my family lives. It's in the middle of our little town. Now, it's a big city. But for me, it's our little town.
We know
our neighbors. We love our neighbors. So I really wanted to open a restaurant that was really connected to myself. And the story of Hayworth, even though it begins in 1976, when I was born, that's the year we were established. The name starts with the street that I brought my daughter home to.
Oh, in Los Angeles.
My first,
Hayworth. Okay.
In Los Angeles, right next to Fairfax.
I know exactly
what I was thinking about. So it was very – when we lived in L.A., we lived right in that Fairfax area, the heart of the deli section, the heart of the farmer's market. And I call that area the heart of Los Angeles. Some people don't, but it's really the epicenter
of Los Angeles.
And it's just a wonderful neighborhood. You could walk through that neighborhood. And it's rural, yet it's got history. And when I brought my daughter home, that's the home we lived in. We lived right on Hayworth. So I said, what's a better start? We're starting our new restaurant, we're now in Henderson forever and ever. This is our new home. And what's a better name than the street that I brought my daughter home to 13 years later?
Yeah, and especially it's because it's an inside joke in a way, or an inside story or family story. It makes sense because, as you said, you located it in an area where you live and where your friends live and your family is. So it all ties in.
It's all about home.
Yeah.
And when I was writing the menu started with my upbringing, this Eastern European kind of feeling. And then we introduced a lot of that California, all that fresh produce, all that, you know, all that pseudo fine dining, all the technique, all that stuff that I've been doing for the past 20 years in culinary.
Now, the logical question and the logistical question is, if someone's at Hayworth and they feel like a piece of barbecue, will you send it over from SMKD?
Well, it's actually quite, you know, we do have some items from the SMKD menu.
Okay.
So we do this amazing, for example, one of our number one sellers, which everyone said I was crazy to put on the menu for a fine dining restaurant, pastrami. So in my restaurant, you can literally get the most beautiful bronze vino, the 30-day or 6-day dry-aged ribeye, beautiful New York's Wagyu steak, or pastrami. And so the pastrami, we do it low and slow. It's smoked.
Right.
And we do this whole technique, and we serve the best pastrami sandwiches. It's smoked. Just the best on rye bread with coleslaw and the whole mustard thing. And then I also take that pastrami and I do a different application for it and bring it to Hayworth. And we do it in a gourmet way with blackberries now and parsnip and a mustard Creole sauce. And it's delicious.
Oh, you're classing up the pastrami. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's classy. And what's become one of our number one sellers. Well, if I don't have that on the menu, people revolt.
It makes sense. Well, yeah, I could see that. When you, how do you manage, because you're the owner and the chef, how do you manage the two restaurants? How far are they apart in terms of distance or time?
They're literally 10 minutes apart. They're 2 miles apart from each other. They're very close. I made sure of that, that we weren't going to open restaurants that are far that I couldn't go to. I'm actually at Smoked virtually every morning. And I bobble in the mornings between prep at Hayworth and Smoked all morning, cutting meat or what have you, prepping. And I have a wonderful pit master at Smoked named Nuandel, who's, you know, rocking and rolling most of the day, smoking all the meats. And then at night, I go to Hayworth to make sure that's executed perfectly while Wendell keeps that up over there.
So in on the strip, they have pit bosses, but you have a pit master.
Yeah, he's the master. He's not just the boss. He's the master.
You know what suddenly dawned on me? I was a little slow, but I just realized once you explained Hayworth, now I know where Ogden comes from in Ogden Hospitality Group.
That's it.
Same area. I live. Okay. I got it.
All right. Hey, listen, everybody's got their thing. I like streets. Streets are memories.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
You know, and we spend a lot of time on some of those places that we live in. And I like to have the homage to them. And when I think of that, that brings me back to that moment. Those happy moments.
Do you find that you get people that come to your restaurants from that area when they're visiting Las Vegas or they've moved to Las Vegas? They may not be in Henderson, but they're in Las Vegas. They're either visiting as visitors or they are local residents that have moved permanently to Las Vegas. Have they found you because of your background in LA?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of New Yorkers out here. There's a lot of New Yorkers out here in Vegas. They've realized no more cold weather. And, you know, they said,
so I don't mean the New Yorkers. I mean the people from L.A.
There's some L.A. There's a lot coming from L.A. Right. There's no doubt about it. But it's really funny to see how many New Yorkers are coming out here. How many New Yorkers live here? You know, they resonate with that New York menu. There are a lot of people there from L.A. They come and they resonate with the menu as well. But some of the menu is just really unique.
They also resonate with the name of one of your restaurants, Hayworth.
They do. But a lot of people don't put the two together.
Oh, okay.
Because they might think it's really Hayworth. They might think it's just somebody's last name, Hayworth. There's not a lot of people that are putting that together.
Yeah, it's your subtle approach that fools them.
Exactly. Exactly. It's one of those names that people are going, they're not offended by it. They're going, oh, I like that name. It's a good name.
Yeah. How do you apply what you learned by being on television on those two shows? How do you apply any of your lessons you learned there in your restaurants today?
Yeah, I learned a lot on the shows. And, you know, the number one thing that the takeaway from shows is food matters. The taste of food matters. You know, on the shows, the reality is people take one, two bites. They take a bite. And that's what they judge you on. They don't care about what happened before. They don't care what's happening anywhere. They don't care. It doesn't really matter what you look like, even almost as much of what it looks like, the plate looks like. It matters what it tastes like. And that's the most important thing. And we forget that. We get so many nuanced things that happen in a restaurant, from the menu paper to the banquettes to the wine glass, the dishwasher, all this. The most important thing at the end of the day is when a guest takes a bite, that they are wowed, surprised, happy. Because at the end of the day, that's what they're coming for.
So it's even more important than plating, in a sense. It may not look as great as the next guy, but if it that first couple of bites, if that sells it.
Well, that's the most important.
Yeah.
Everything else is also very, very important. Not to take away the importance of, look, people have, people eat with their eyes. People have this, you know, hospitality is the most important thing of why most people come back. But from the shows, the most important thing that I took away was that first bite.
Mm-hmm.
That bite needs to be incredible. The flavors need to be there. The culinary, you can't get away. You can't fake it. On the shows, you can't fake it. With a lot of restaurants, you and I both know, especially in many businesses, they're faking it. It's all about the smoke and the mirrors and the shadows. And at the end of the day, you're like, I don't really go there because the food's so excellent. I go there because I have a great time.
Right.
I need to make sure that the food is excellent. And then everything else needs to make sure that it's a great time, because everything else is very important in the business.
Yeah, I always am impressed by the amount of labor involved from the top to the bottom of a restaurant. In other words, all these different moving parts, everything has to be executed exactly right. The food preparation, the hospitality, the service, the food itself. I mean, it's a fine art, and I'm always impressed by people that can pull it off.
You know, I've been in a couple of businesses, and I've seen a lot. The restaurant business is probably one of the toughest, if not the toughest, because it encompasses different style of business. We are a production company. We produce every day. We have to physically produce an item.
Right.
We are a business with many different high end and the lowest end. So from our general manager, it needs to be one of the smartest people in any room, to our dishwashers, which is one of the hardest laborers in the country. And then our culinary associates, and then our salespeople on the floor, or hospitality associates on the floor. Whatever it is that you describe it, we are multifaceted. It's an industry, and every single one has so many moving parts and so many different aspects of it. Where I'm not going to downplay different businesses, but if you're a computer programmer, 90% of all your business associates are computer programmers.
Right.
If you're a lawyer, all your people are lawyers. We have to hire all different kinds of employees who have to coexist, co-work, and produce every day while working on the lowest margins possible.
So you have to have a passion. You have to have a passion for it.
You have to have a passion. You know, I always tell people when I consult, when they say, what do you think I should do? Should I open this restaurant? I say, no, run away. The restaurant business is the worst. They say, why do you do it? I said, I have no choice. I like this. And I don't know why, but I do.
Well, that's a
and
great
I'm good
way
to, at it, you know.
That's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Chef Alex Resnick. He's building two distinctive dining destinations in Henderson, and they're going strong: SMKD BBQ and Hayworth. You can follow the chef as well as SMKD BBQ and Hayworth on Instagram. And Chef, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I had a great time.
Same here. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Hey, Las Vegas.